Lemony Snicket is back. The first new series, All the Wrong Questions, comes as the first series since his catastrophically successful A Series of Unfortunate Events, which has sold over 60 million copies worldwide and has been translated into 39 languages. All the Wrong Questions reunites Snicket with his longtime representative Daniel Handler, author of the Prince Honor winning young adult book Why We Broke Up, which was described as beautifully rendered by the New York Times. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Daniel Handler back to the roundtable. Daniel, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
What was it about this project that you understand that it was time for Lemony Snicket to return?
It was, I guess, basically a story that started to haunt me while I was finishing A Series of Unfortunate Events. I had an idea that Lemony Snicket's own childhood would kind of follow that of another genre of literature that had always intrigued me, which was noir. So as I was finishing my pile of gothic novels that accompanied me for A Series of Unfortunate Events, I began to stack up a huge pile of Charles Williford and Megan Abbott and James Cain and Raymond Chandler. Before I knew it, I had found myself enmeshed in another mysterious and unreliable world.
Did you ever think about having another character attached to it, or did you always want the Lemony Snicket, a name attached to it?
Well, I guess I've always felt a strong attachment to Mr. Snicket, so I was reluctant to let him go. I was curious to see if there was some reason that he couldn't be the 13-year-old boy I envisioned in a small, lonely town solving mysteries, and I didn't see any reason why he couldn't.
When you look at how you've planned out this series, the other one, the other series, A Series of Unfortunate Events, was always going to be 13 books. Do you have the same plan of a finite number?
Oh yeah, it's 4 volumes, and it's actually much more planned ahead than A Series of Unfortunate Events ever was. So the Series of Unfortunate Events, I took a lot of pleasure in improvisation because I thought that the kind of gothic, penny dreadful feeling meant that you could come up with a terrifying secret later, but tell people earlier that there was a terrifying secret. Noir is more of a mystery, so the threads are more need to be more tightly connected. So it's been a mystery that I've plotted out for quite some time, even before I really put pen to paper.
Given your trademark of having such humor and having such a crisp dialogue and book and again great wit, did the form present any challenge to your writing style and your voice?
I don't think it presented a challenge to my writing style. It presented a challenge to my plots. I'm used to ridiculous plots that don't quite have to add up.
Right.
And noir is ridiculous plots that do. So I had to study and outline very carefully various mysteries I admired to figure out how one does it. I think if you're not, I'm not a crossword puzzle solver, or I'm not good at any kind of little puzzle like that. I think if you're not naturally good at that, then writing a mystery can be a challenge.
How soon in the process, and I should mention that the books are absolutely gorgeous. The art is by Seth, who has created this amazing package. Did that come early in the process? Was that important to you?
It came, well, I had finished a draft of the first volume, and I'm a longtime subscriber and aficionado of Poetry Magazine. And Poetry Magazine came in my door, and there on the cover was a very haunting image that Seth had drawn. I've been a long-time fan of Seth's graphic novels, but I hadn't ever thought I would work with him. I thought my relationship would be limited to fandom. But when I saw this beautiful image that looked like a seaside town, and it looked very much like the lonely seaside town that I was enmeshed in writing about, I thought he'd be a splendid illustrator. So I went to WonderCon in my hometown of San Francisco and kind of waded through thousands of people dressed as Star Wars characters to find Seth lonely in a vintage suit, signing copies of his latest book, and I kind of talked at him until he agreed at least to think about it. He'd never really done a project like this and was understandably nervous and may, in fact, still be nervous, but I'm glad that I managed to pin him down.
It is, and it adds a lot, obviously, to just the feel of the story.
I quite agree. He's, he and I, although we're not friends and haven't known each other very long, but I think he and I have extremely similar sensibilities. There's nothing either of us like better than thinking about a lonely man wandering through a desolate town.
You talk about this...
Nice work if you can get it, I might add.
Indeed, absolutely. You talk about Mr. Snicket's desperate town. It's a seaside town that lacks a sea.
Yes, the new series takes place in the town of Stained-by-the-Sea, which once had a thriving ink industry, thanks to the octopi that were in the seawater that that bordered the town. As the octopi grew less and less, as the population of octopi shrank, the ink industry decided to drain the sea in order to get the last few octopi out of the last few caves. And so now there's a desolate town stained by the sea that has no sea. Its industry is just about gone. Its thriving beachside tourist business has long vanished, and it has become one of those lonely towns one stumbles across on desperate road trips.
Kirkus, in their review of this book and giving it a starred review, basically called it a weird and witty yarn. Do you agree with those terms?
I don't know. Radio News has called you very handsome. What do you have to say about that?
The witty, I would think, but the weird, in the sense of, do you think about that at all going in, that you realize that your voice tends to be something that is a little different?
I suppose so. I mean, the word weird has been hurled at me since I ever knew what it meant. So I've long since resigned myself to the fact that most people think I'm strange. I mean, the book was officially published for me just yesterday, and which I realize might be something of a time warp for the listeners of this program, but I was at a Barnes & Noble in Long Island that also looked something like a faded town that was filled with people, some of whom have memorialized various aspects of Lemony Snicket in ink on their bodies. I find that a lot weirder than anything I've done, but apparently I'm the weird man in that room.
Was it a great surprise or a great pleasure or both to learn that people got it and were so interested in reading more about the characters that you created in that first series?
It's constantly startling to me. I mean, I think perhaps because I've been called weird my entire life, I assumed that the best I could ever hope for the books I was writing when I decided writing would be my career would be some tiny cult audience. I remember that I used to say to people when I was writing my first novel that I hoped I would become the next John Hawkes, and the fact that John Hawkes' name may not be familiar to most people hearing this program only proves my case. So I've been startled all along that anyone's been interested, and I'm particularly startled that the interest has not waned.
My mother, when she...
Uh-oh, now we're talking about your mother.
My mother was a librarian, and she passed a few years ago, but she was a librarian, and she would often come home and pick out books for her granddaughter, my niece, who was, I don't know, maybe 10, 11 years old at the time, and she came home with the first and second books, and she said, "Oh my God, I have to have Sarah read these because they're unlike anything I've seen in so long come into the children's section. They're smart."
Oh dear, what a sad children's section that must be.
Well, you know, but you have to. There is an intelligence. There is a great, again, going back to the wit and the humor of these books that isn't just something that's being churned out by some giant corporation.
Well, I mean, I was completely ignorant, really, of the world of children's literature when I entered it. I'd read many, many books as a child, but I'd never thought I would be writing for children, and I didn't know anything about writing for children when I embarked on it, and so nobody told me I couldn't do anything. The idea that someone was going to pay me money to write about terrible things happening to orphans over and over again seemed like such a lark and such a strange gift that I vowed I wouldn't squander it, so I just wrote what I thought would be interesting. And now that I am more in the world of children's literature, that tends to be the case with many people who are prominent in one way or another in the field, is that they didn't think they were going to be writing for children, and they didn't really know anything about it. And so I think their ignorance served as a blessing.
And obviously,
I hate to say on NPR that ignorance can serve as a blessing. I like to emphasize that this is a case-by-case basis.
I don't know about NPR, but for our program, I think that's a fine motto. When you look at this particular series, though, and back to that book story in Long Island, I would assume your fan base now, though, is both children and adults.
Well, I think that the fan base of children's literature has always been children and adults. I think that over the past decade or so, children's literature has gotten so much attention in a movement that certainly was spearheaded partially by Harry Potter, that I think adults are just less ashamed of reading children's books. In the beginning days of Snicket, many adults would come, and they would often have increasingly disparate children with them, or distantly related children. You know, they would say, my co-worker's niece begged me to take her here to this Barnes & Noble, and you would see this girl looking very awkward next to the adults. And now I think people are just not ashamed of themselves. They wait in line behind an 8-year-old, they're a fully grown person, and they say, and I would like you to sign this book for me. So I think that it's true that I have many adult readers and many young readers, but I think that children's books have always been that way. There's a certain kind of adult who loves to page through a picture book. There are many, many adults who want to read nostalgically the books they loved as children. There are many adults who are drawn into the world of fantasy and science fiction that is often overlapping with children's literature, and I just think now they don't have to be ashamed of it anymore.
Daniel Handler is the man behind All the Wrong Questions series. This is book one. Who Could That Be at This Hour is the new book. It is illustrated by Seth, and it's absolutely beautiful, and it's a great read and an awful lot of fun. Lemony Snicket, Who Could That Be at This Hour? Daniel Handler, a great pleasure to have you back in the program. Best of luck to you, and we can't wait to read the following
volumes.
Thank
you very much. Great regards
pleasure.
To your niece.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Lemony Snicket's Who Could That Be at This Hour? Part of the All the Wrong Questions series, book one. It's published by Little Brown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.